welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. As always, it's good to be here with you again at OC Talk Radio. And today, Paul, is a you and me show.
You and me. I'm
you
ready.
And me, yep. And I plan for us to talk about one of your favorite subjects, change. Now, I know you hate change, you're going to be the perfect partner for this important show. But before we begin our subject, I want to give you a public congratulations on your new grandchild.
Well, thank you. There was a change that came in my life here.
It was just like a week and a half ago?
Yes. Actually, my second grandson was born. Little Aiden, little good Irishman that he is.
Got an Irish name.
My daughter's Hispanic, but she gave him an Irish name here.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I was going to ask how many grandchildren you have. So this is how old is your first grandson?
First grandson just turned 6 the same week. So now we only have to have one birthday every year for both of them.
Oh, that's horrible for the kids.
Really?
Great for you, but horrible for the kids.
Really?
Well, that's great news, Paul. Congratulations.
You know, and given today's topic, it is kind of timely that you bring it up because that was a change I wasn't prepared for to be a grandfather at this age. I never knew my grandparents, so I had no role model to follow. I didn't know what it was like to be a grandparent. And at first it was very confusing, but it's been the most exhilarating thing I've ever gone through in my life. It's the coolest job in the world. You fill them up with sugar and you send them home. It's all the fun and none of the worry.
That's what I hear. You know, my son was just married last November, so I'm going to find out within a few short years of what that's all about. I can't say. I know everybody says it's the greatest. Being a grandparent is the greatest. And I look at it and say, I don't want to clean diapers again.
Well, there is that to it. But they do. It is a different feeling. You look at the little guy when he comes over and you start to say, don't do that. Don't pick your nose. And then you're like, the heck with it. Pick your nose. Go ahead. Here, have some more sugar.
You know, have some more sugar.
So it's all the fun and with little or less of the responsibility and worry that you had when you were a parent.
Well, congratulations. That's great news.
Thank you.
Okay. Over the weekend, as I was reading, I came across a quote by playwright George Bernard Shaw, who wrote this.
Another Irishman.
Is he?
Oh, yeah.
You Irish people, you think everything is Irish.
Everybody is Irish.
And everything that is Irish, you think is the best in the world. And, you know, it's a country that's about the size of
Peanut.
Pico Rivera.
Exactly. Can I just give you a quick one on this? So Joe Biden, who's very Irish, was at his rally the other day, and he quoted some English poet. I hadn't heard a president... anybody quoted poetry in a long time. So he said this poem, and it was in English. And then he said, and let me tell you, though, a real poem and by an Irishman. And I just thought, this is that, just using that term. Yeah, there's poets, and then there's real poets, the Irishmen. So that's the way we view
you
it.
You Irish. I don't know.
Everybody's a little Irish.
Yeah, no. So anyway, let's go back to this. This quote by this Irish poet, George Bernard Shaw, who wrote this: progress is impossible without change, and those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything. Mm. Now, I had a difficult time with the transition between those. It was not really an expected transition. So let's dissect this quote a bit. First of all, Shaw said, progress is not possible without change. Okay, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Assuming you're an advocate of progress, then you cannot have progress without changing something. That's a flat given. That's, you know, there's no need to debate or discuss that change is necessary for progress, or else it's a status quo. But now, then notice where Shaw goes with the next piece of the quote. And I find it quite unexpected. He says, and those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything. I found it interesting that he talks about changing your mind as a primary element in progress and change. And I really like that idea because I believe that change begins with an internal acceptance of doing or believing something different. But that it is, change begins internally. It does not begin externally. It begins with a belief system. And I want to talk a lot more about changing your mind in just a bit. But before I do, I would like to be clear that our subject for today is what I'm calling deliberate change. Now, change comes in many forms, such as drastic, intermittent, spontaneous, and then there is thoughtful or deliberate change, both of which imply some form of intentionality. The first three types of change, drastic, intermittent, spontaneous, most often occur in spite of us and not because of us. And most of the times, these kinds of changes are forced on us by circumstances that some authority or another person is putting on us. In other words, it is a change that we ourselves did not initiate. And we are looking at one today that you brought up, and that's the coronavirus.
Yeah, it's been imposed upon us. Nobody wanted it, was prepared for it, knows what to do with it.
And it's, I'm not knocking the change. I'm not saying the change is wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm saying I have no idea. I haven't enough evidence to make any kind of decisions on it. But change is imposed. But such also, as I was thinking before the coronavirus has really becoming daily an increasing issue, such is a political climate today, isn't it? One party wants us to change back mm-hmm. to the good old days, mm-hmm. whatever the hell those were. Mm-hmm. And the other side desires a change forward, not necessarily better, but forward, moving different, a change of, implying a change to do something different from the way we've been doing politics. Mm-hmm. Either way, the change is something we personally have little to do with apart from voting. Other than voting, you know, we get the brunt of the change, and I stray, and I want to be careful that you don't take the entire show ranting on politics.
Ah, the opening he's been looking for.
Yeah, I know. which I guess ranting is one way of dealing with change. It's not very productive, but it is a load of fun.
It is a load of fun.
But back to our topic, deliberate change. Deliberate or thoughtful or intentional change requires at the start. Now, this is I think really important, that this kind of change requires a conscious choice to change one's mind.
Let's just stop on that for a second, because I'm still trying to digest that. So you're saying I can't change, there's something within me that has to change first. There is some barrier to change built into us. Unless we change our existing mindset, fights change. Is that it?
Yeah. Unless you're pathologically inclined to change, like myself.
Like you are, yeah. You seem to embrace change, look change, seek change.
But yes. Safe because of our, you know, if you look at our Maslowian chart mm-hmm. of moving toward enlightenment. The very first level is safety and security, and that implies
no change, right?
Yeah, you make change and you impact safety and security, and we have to be ready for that. But this changing one's mind, let me go on with this just a bit, because I really found something interesting on it, that changing one's mind also means repenting. Which is odd in the Bible. Did you know that the actual definition of the word repent in the Bible literally means to change one's mind?
No.
It does not mean to change your behavior or to ask for forgiveness or to pay penance or what do they call those things where they paid money for
indulgences. Right.
You know, that's not what repent is.
don't bring us Catholics back into it again. Indulgences.
So when John the Baptist went around preaching, repent for the kingdom of God is at hand, he was actually telling the people, change your ways of thinking. because life itself is about to be changed significantly in the near future.
And yet you think of repenting as changing your ways of acting. I'm not going to be mean anymore. I'm not going to be negative. I'm not going to do I'm not going to do that anymore. But you're saying it starts, it's not just a behavioral change, it's a mind change.
It's a mind change, it's an internal mindset change. It's where your whole psyche, your conscious and unconscious.
Maybe that's why change is so difficult, because I can change my behavior. I can get myself to get up 10 minutes earlier. I may not like it, but I can force myself to go out and exercise or do something. But to change my belief, to change my thinking on something, to say, I used to think that was wrong and maybe it's not, that's hard.
Why?
Good question. I'm trying to think through it myself, but look how set, and the older we get, don't we get more set in those ways?
Not all of us.
No, you're weird. You do. You're from another planet here or something. But I find more people getting more set in their ways. I certainly have as I've gotten older. It's harder for me to get out of my mindset. And I think that's what's led to this hardening of political views. As our country has gotten older, we're not a younger country, we're an older country. Like many Western countries, our birth rate's dropping, so that population's aging, we're living longer than we ever have. Maybe that's
except
why.
In third world countries where the population is exploding.
Yeah, exactly. And young people are exploding. You know, some of these countries are half young people or third young people.
600,000 people at 15 and older are entering the workforce annually in Uganda.
Wow. See, yeah.
600,000 people are entering the workforce.
And you think of what's the declining birth rate in Europe and Japan, here in the United States, and how the aging baby boomers are living longer. So there's fewer babies being born, older people living longer. That's got to upend that.
Yeah, well, you know, that I think
I never thought about
the older
it,
the older people. And the reluctance to change goes back to the two words that we used earlier, and that is safety and security.
Maybe.
They have their income, which just became terribly unsafe in the market.
Yeah, right.
And I'm feeling really fortunate that we're not going to have to tap into ours for probably close to another decade. So
good.
There will be time to recover from this loss. But there are those that are depending on that income.
Oh,
that,
yeah, they need it today or tomorrow. So, but you're onto something here, and I don't know, I've never really thought about it, but what is it about us as we get older? That's one of those accepted truisms. I don't know if it's really true, but we accept that the older you get, hard to teach an old dog new tricks. Hard to change the older you get. You get set in your ways. We've all heard these statements, and I think there's truth in it. Why do we calcify, solidify? Why do we get set in our ways?
You know, I think that's, you know, one thing I have to say about that is that's anecdotal, and I would love I would love to see data on that, to see, you know, what really is the change equation of people as they grow older, 50, 60, 70. Because I'm with a lot of people that do like change and do like to do things differently, yet I do know a host that do not, that believe what they're going to believe, and you can, no matter what kind of evidence you give them, evidence means nothing. Evidence
yeah.
means nothing. But those are not the people I'm talking about today.
No.
I'm talking about people who understand the need for change, and that change happens either to them or actually for them, that they are, and I want to talk about the change that we initiate ourselves, and that requires an internal determination that dictates our actions and beliefs.
Okay.
We decide based on a number of factors that our reasoning may be faulty, and that we may need to reconsider. And look at the number of things that have totally been reconsidered since 1970 to 2020. I mean, we have women's issues, yeah. we have gender issues, we have race issues.
Gay rights is the most dramatic change I've ever seen the country go through.
And women. Women has not been small.
No. But I'm just saying, in a rapid period of time, we went for President Obama started off as saying, I believe in that marriage isn't just for a man and a woman. Halfway through his term, he changed. That rapid acceptance of gay rights and gay marriage
shows my knowledge of politics. He changed from what to what?
He started, like nearly every politician, saying that marriage should just be for a man and a woman, that he could not wrap his head around gay marriage. He did not support it. And by the end of his term, he had willingly admitted he changed.
Good.
That's not something most politicians do that quickly. And you know, whether he did it willingly or under pressure or saw the handwriting on the wall, what I don't know, you know, good, bad, or whatever, what went on in his mind. But I think that, you think of how long it took for civil rights or women's emancipation, which is still in many ways still going on. I thought we'd fought this battle, and here we are in the Me Too movement all over again.
That's fading.
Yep, I'm just saying, these issues that I thought had been fought for and addressed a long time ago, companies had sexual harassment policies and stuff in place, suddenly, but they weren't following them, or they weren't adhering to them.
Well, they weren't believing them yet, yeah. And after a couple of lawsuits, you start believing.
Yeah, so here's my point to change. Does change come, change in your mind, in yourself, what is the epiphany, what is the triggering event? Is it something outside you, a disaster, a lawsuit, a problem, something that makes you re-look at your life? I think of times I've had to re-look at my life, usually when something went really bad. Or is it a proactive, I'm happy where I'm at and I want to be happier?
You know, I think honestly, you gave really good examples, and I have to say I'm sorry, yes, to all of them, because it is, in my experience, it is really one of two things: it's data or experience.
Yes,
you know, the data becomes clear that what I once believed, I no longer can believe, or my experience, and that was the reason. I'm not as much into international travel, especially today, but not as much into international travel since I've taken on the charity work, and I'm in Africa 2 to 3 to 4 times a year.
Yeah, that's filled a role.
But that experiential change has really changed my worldview drastically, my view of how the world operates. When I spend so much time in a developing country, I begin to understand what makes people tick in that country. And believe me, I have scratched the surface. I do not pretend to be an expert in that. But what we would consider corruption is not corruption there.
No, that's just normal day
business.
That is
the way you do business. If you know, taking a bribe.
You grease my hand, I grease yours. Yeah.
Yep, and hiring friends. This is not an ethical issue. It would be looked on laughingly as an ethical issue, because it is simply the way business is done. That's how you know your brother gets a job, and you're thinking, thank goodness, you know, I have a chance of getting a job at the same place,
right?
Because my brother has a job, and that begins to impact my worldview.
Yes.
And my worldview of the way life exists, and my worldview of ethics, and that they are socially determined. They are not determined by some...
You don't just sit on a mountaintop and come to the conclusion here. Let me contemplate life. That's the way it should be.
But we do in the West.
Well, we're always on a quest. You're part of that generation. You're the poster child for it. You're always looking to improve yourself. You're always on a self-quest to go deeper into your psyche and experience something. You're always putting yourself... That's your generation.
Well,
always looking for self-awareness.
That's me of our generation. I was just talking to somebody about the hippies, and they were of the hippie days, and they said, we really didn't do shit.
It's a little unromanticized, maybe.
It was really, I just read an article about it, and it was really about a 4 or 5 year deal. You know, it was really about that, 1967 to 1970, 71.
Yeah.
You know, it started in 64, but
it's the last couple of years. The Summer of Love was 69. That was probably the highest.
Yeah, and that was when I started. I started in 67 at UCLA and then left my full scholarship for gymnastics to be a full-time hippie.
Yeah, right. I mean, you literally hitchhiked across the country, didn't you?
I did. 3 months on $200. And a backpack and a guitar.
So what led, here's my question to you. Look back on that, Charlie. What led to that kind of dramatic, conscious, deliberative change?
Simple. Curiosity.
It
was curiosity and experience. I've never experienced anything like this. Curiosity, experience, the opportunity for genuine freedom. No one saying to do anything. We picked up, you know, we would spend a night at a place, and if we liked it, we would stay. If we didn't, we would go out and put our thumbs out and hitchhike to another place.
But it wasn't safe and secure.
Oh, it was.
But you're safe and secure at UCLA, a prestigious school. You've got a full scholarship there. Can't get much easier. Money's not a worry. No, you're not going to go into the draft, and nothing's going to happen here. And yet you chose to do something very uncertain, go out into the great unknown for excitement.
Because I got bored of school. I just got bored with school. But we're going to move on.
All right.
Those are great questions.
The only point I make is the time in my life that I experienced the greatest change was similarly when I went to college. I went from being a sheltered suburban kid to University of Michigan, wide open, and I did. I changed my views on many, many things, life in general, just because of that experience. I wasn't expecting to change. I didn't go there to change, but it was life-changing.
All right, so let's. You know what I want to do today is something that's a part of me. Systems are a part of me, and yet I don't want to present a system for change.
Okay.
What I'm going to do is it's going to come out like a system, so there's going to be 5 points. But
you want to take a break first, and then you're prepping us for this?
Let me prep us, and then we'll get into there. Just a couple minutes for a break. What I want to do is for the remainder of our time to discuss some elements or stages of deliberate change and changing your mind. But please, I ask the audience to keep in mind that although I present these as stages in a process, any one of them can be applied at any part of your process. So I would prefer that you look at Paul and my chat as ideas, not necessarily a system. They may come out as a system, but I also want to say this, and I may remind us after the break, but no, let's take the break, and then I'll do this, because it's better to take the break.
Yeah, you're launching into something big. I got to get ready here. I got to go to the bathroom and get set here.
Listening to Charlie Hedges at the Next Chapter with Charlie, and I am talking to producer Paul about deliberate change. And we have covered the difficulty of old people changing their mind, which is Paul, and young people which change their mind easily, which is me, although I'm older than Paul. So
only physically.
Well,
mentally I got you beat here, right? I'm an old soul here. You're a young hippie at heart.
I think I am. Now, as I said just before the break, that I would like our listeners to look at this as ideas, not necessarily a system, although they're presented as stages
It doesn't, you can break the stage and do things out of order. It doesn't make a difference. These are just ideas, but they are, they tell well as stages. Now, to help us in the process, I'm actually going to do what producer Paul has been wanting me to do for forever, and I'm going to use a story
as
an example.
We're turning into an Irishman here. All right.
We are not turning into
Irish love stories.
We have not turning into an Irishman. You know, you're not going to get me to have a pint and sing a song.
That's the start. That's the first step. Take a pint and sing a song.
And sing a song. You got to sing a song, whether you can sing or not. But to help us in the process, I want to use this example that goes way back to 1990. And that was when, as a successful minister in a megachurch, I made a decision that within 1 year, I would be doing an entirely new job.
Wow.
That I would no longer, and it would not be a church-related job. And I had no idea what that job was. I had experience in business in the 70s where I managed for a decade. I managed around 100 people in a wet processing division of a carpet mill. But then I went to seminary, and my education was in theology, and my history was in theology. I didn't know, you know, how that was going to impact, how I was going to get into the business world if my resume would allow that.
No, I got to stop you because the whole world is screaming to know, why did you make that decision? Do you remember when you made it, and why did you make it? Why change? You'd gone to school. You'd become successful. Why change?
I'm silent because I'm debating on how much of the truth I tell.
Oh, we want all the truth. We want to hear it all.
I just was not hardwired to be a minister of a church. I discovered, I went to seminary for 3 years, got my degrees.
That's a lot of effort, right?
And I entered the ministry to preach, teach, counsel, baptize, marry, bury. And I found out that was about 15% of my job.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The rest of my job was administrative because I had so many. It was a mega church. I had so many people that I was responsible for. I was responsible for training and leadership development, small groups. I had over 260 leaders that reported to me.
Wow.
And I was in charge of single adults ministry that had over 1,000 people, 300 to 400 people would show up every Sunday to listen to me ramble on. And the preaching was fine. But then it was just, when you're doing that, you're managing, you know, a singles group, so I was managing freaking dances, you know, that we got to do dances.
Of course,
and what do I care about?
Social director.
Yeah. What do I care about being? Yeah, that was it. I felt like a cruise director, you know, and it was just not me. And then there were just things about the church that were not me that.
But was there an epiphany, a breaking point, when you said, this is it, I can remember the night I came home and threw it down the thing and said, or was it just a gradual, at some point I just knew?
You know, it was like a breaking point, but I can't tell you what the breaking point was. I can't tell you any event or circumstances that led to it, but it was really quick. It was within a week where I just said, I had gradually been coming to it, Paul. I was growing weary of being an administrator, and I said, if I'm going to be an administrator, I'm going to get paid for it. You don't get paid for it at a church.
Right.
The kind of work that I was doing, I could get paid for in the corporate world. And it turned out that the job I ended up with paid in 3 days what I made a month in the church. So, I mean, I fell into a lucrative thing, but we'll talk about that later. But I just decided it was time to change. I no longer fit in the church way of thinking. There was a lot of things. My theology was changing. There was a lot of factors, but it became just really obvious with all those factors.
Okay.
I needed to make a change. So Let's start with what are the stages or steps of
change,
of making a deliberate change, intentional change. This is something that you have decided to do. This is not something that this
forced
is
forced upon you. I get fired or something.
This is like getting fired, divorce,
right.
Coronavirus,
yeah, right.
All of that. And it begins with an acknowledgement of a faulty belief system. I think the starting point is acknowledging that perhaps your presuppositions or beliefs may be faulty. Alan Jones once made a great quote in a book that he wrote, a journey book, and he wrote, "Most of us have secondhand beliefs." And I have never forgotten that quote. I read it 30 years ago. And the quote is so true because most of us believe what we're told to believe. Mm-hmm. And especially in churches, we believe whatever the pastor tells us to believe mm-hmm. without really researching and pondering, what do I believe in my core self? And so that leaves lots of room for faulty thinking because I have not really analyzed it, not determined it, not made the decision based on data and evidence that I have thought through. I have just allowed those decisions. And we discover our faulty presuppositions based on new data that we get, new information, like you talked about Obama mm-hmm. and gay marriage. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that he got new data mm-hmm. that and new experiences, and it said, I'm going to change my mind. No, perhaps it was a totally political decision. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not going to go there.
I don't either.
But it was
traumatic, and it was public, and it took place in a short period of time.
But he got new data. Mm-hmm. You know, he talked to some people, new experience, and came out and said, you know, my beliefs were wrong, which, you know, I'd really admire the guy for doing that. You know, I love telling people, you know, don't believe what I say today because I could change my mind tomorrow.
Right.
You know, if someone were to give me new data.
So let me give you some new data here. Let me just challenge you on that. So you've talked about, I think you said once a long time ago, if you'd been born in another country, would you still be a Christian?
Nope.
Yeah, you might be a Muslim or a Buddhist.
No, if I was born in Iraq, I wouldn't. Might be a Muslim. I would be a Muslim.
Yeah, and that would be your worldview, and that's what you're raised to believe, and you
yep.
would. I think that's true of most of us. I don't think most of us, we either abandon our views and become sort of a mishmash of nothing, which is happening more and more, but I don't see very often that people say, I was a devout Catholic, and now I'm a devout Buddhist. I don't think that happens too often. I don't think we get to that point where we suddenly sit down and say, all right, let me take a rational look at both worldviews here.
And yet I think that's absolutely essential, and that's what I have done in the last especially decade. I have researched other religions, especially Franciscan Christianity mm-hmm. and Taoism in China in Eastern thought, and it has significantly impacted my views on Christianity. It has not taken me away from Christianity; it's just added to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's added new information, added a fulfillment to it that. I had one narrow way of looking at it, and now I have a much broader stance, a much more open world view. And that came through, again, data and experience. Data, doing the reading,
mm-hmm.
and then experiencing these things. And that came to, you know, all of my I have gone from a conservative and what do you call them in the human justice systems of gender issues, racial issues, sexual orientation issues, health issues? I've gone from a very conservative point of view to not a liberal point of view, but
perhaps
progressive,
right.
Centrist. Little left.
Mm-hmm.
Centrist, just little left.
You've moved, right.
Yeah, but that was because of information, and I've changed my mind on that. And so what I had to do was, first of all, acknowledge that my belief system was faulty.
Well, even before you acknowledge it, you have to recognize it. You have to say, you have to question it. And then you have to, once you question it and investigate it, then it either holds up or it doesn't. I always said to my daughter, I don't think most people go through this. I know she didn't, and I always thought people should. There comes a point in your life, usually when you're a teenager, where you have to start to really decide, what are my core beliefs? In other words, what is I won't compromise on? Will I take drugs or not? Will I have sex or not? Will I cheat or lie or not here? At some point, it's not what you've been taught or told to do, but it's what you know, right or wrong, good or bad, this is me.
This is my core. And then... at some point, when you get new data, like let's just go back to President Obama.
Gay marriage or something.
You know, right. He received new data that he had an intact belief system.
Yeah, a strong belief system.
But he received new information, received new insight, and acknowledged he had a faulty belief system.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to say that, you know, when we have secondhand beliefs, we have faulty belief systems. Those are just nature, because
right.
they are not held within ourselves. So then that moves us to the next step. So once you acknowledge, okay, I've got a faulty belief system, I don't know, you know, exactly what I'm going to do with it, I think it goes to the next step, and that is you admit a desire to change.
Yes, right.
Now, you don't know what that change is going to be, but you admit a desire to change, and that change will impact your behaviors. And this admitting a desire to change is proven so strongly in the first of the 12 steps.
I was going to say, this sounds a lot like 12 steps. Isn't the first step you admit you have a problem?
Yep, and your life is unmanageable.
Right, and the second step is what? I never remember the second step in the 12-step program.
Oh, man, don't be asking me the steps. I'm supposed to know the steps.
You're supposed to spit them off
to know that I cannot make a change, but there is a power greater than myself.
Yes, I need help.
That can do it. I need... yeah, I like that. I need help. I need help. But
so I got a problem and I need help.
But this is surely admitting that I desire to change is surely a most vital step in this whole process. If I acknowledge that I have a faulty belief system, but I don't have a desire to change, then I'm just admitting that I'm living on a house built on sand,
yeah,
not on rock. And so...
Can I throw another one in there, though?
Yeah.
Do you believe you can change? Because I really... I'll bet that's not on your list, but I don't think most people think they can change. If they had a job... Were you married at the time that you had made this change?
Yes.
So you got a house, you got a wife, maybe you got a kid. Some of them start to feel like, I can't change even if I want to. I met a guy years and years ago. I'll tell you my story. At a party. And he said, you're that guy that does all these things and lives in California. This is back east. I said, yeah. He said, I wish I could be like you. I wish I could change. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, I work for a railroad. My dad worked for a railroad. My grandfather works for a railroad. I hate working for a railroad. I'm like, well, change. I can't. I got a house. I got kids. I got payments. I got everything. I got a life invested in this. I can't change. He was convinced. He hated his life, but he was convinced he couldn't change. And I thought, how sad.
Yeah, he had a faulty belief system.
Mm-hmm.
But could not acknowledge the faulty belief system.
I see, okay, right.
Could not go to say, my belief system is errant.
The belief that I can't change, right, because he just felt trapped. I think a lot of people feel trapped.
Yes, yes, and that is an errant belief system. I think it needs to be done. Let's go through all of them and see if they're helpful through the rest of the stages, see if they're helpful. But they sort of deal with that. But that is a great point, that in the time of child rearing, you know, your 30s, your early 40s, your late 20s, those are times that are critical, not only to yourself, but they're impacting your loved ones as well.
Easy to change when I went to college. I didn't affect anybody but me. Harder to change when you get married, kids, houses, cars, careers.
I had marriage and houses. I did not have children when I made the change.
Okay.
I didn't have children until I was an old man. I was 42 when my son was born.
What? Wow.
Okay. Yeah. I'm coaching baseball at 50 when the rest of these guys are 20-something. But I was beating their ass like crazy.
I want to go back and see that scene. All right, go ahead.
Yeah. So we begin with admitting a faulty belief system. 2, admit a desire to change. And 3 is really quite obvious. It's okay, I need to change. 3 is just consider your options. Weigh the evidence. Although you have already admitted to yourself that your beliefs may be faulty or that you may or may not have arrived at a replacement conclusion, that I'm thinking like, what, you know, I wanted to go to my life story, but I'm going to Brock's, and he could easily say, my gay marriage thing is wrong. Is not, I no longer believe in that. You know, wrong or right is the wrong word. I no longer believe in that, but I don't know what I do believe.
Yes.
I do know I don't believe this, but I don't know what I
do. You just defined.
Defined it?
Defined it. You just found it and defined it. That's a new word, defined it. You came up with a way to explain, in my mind, why... I will say the majority of Americans do not have any sort of clear religious belief anymore. For the first time ever, Pew polls the last couple of years have shown, when they ask people, what's your religious preference, they say none of the above. No identification, no real clear feeling. Because they know what they don't like anymore. I'm not a Catholic. I'm not an evangelical. I'm not that anymore. But they don't know what they become. They're very unclear of what comes next.
And that is where I think we have to make if this belief system you have is important enough, then I think it urges you to make an evaluation of what are your options. What are the options that are out there? Rather than just sit with non-recorded and non-belief, you knew religion was once, you know, using your example, you knew religion was once important to you.
Right.
But it no longer is important. But
what now?
But what now? And I think we're talking about essential elements of life. I think, you know, belief in a deity or not is, you know, and I'm at this point not advocating either, although, you know, I have a strong belief system.
Right. As do I, right.
But I respect those that don't. And if you choose to don't, make it a choice.
Yes.
Make it a conscious choice. And so, you know, this requires deep thought, conversation with your closest friends, and counsel with experts in the field, and reading. If it's, you know, if we're going to be talking about religion, look a little bit at it and see what sort of spirituality do you want to embrace? Because I like the way Terry, in our last episode, defined spirituality as it's not flesh and blood. There's something much more to me than flesh and blood.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe with every human being, there is something much more than flesh and blood. And to help sort of articulate that, even if half of it is, I don't know,
as long as you're on the journey to finding it, I think many people say, I don't know, and quit. I don't know what to do with my life. I don't know where to go. I don't know what to believe. And they just stop. And that becomes paralyzing. It doesn't, they don't embrace, they don't say, well, let me go on a logical search, let me break it down, let me draw a T on a piece of paper and put the pluses and minuses and let me explore all the options. They just get frozen by that, I don't know if it's fear or whatever, but they just, I can't move forward. I can't go back.
Then let's go back to step two, which is, do they desire to change? You're talking about people that don't desire to change.
Maybe they're cut.
If you don't desire to change, then it's not going to happen.
I have been, here's a weird analogy I'll tie in. I've had moments and periods in my life where I went through lots of depression. I don't seem like a depressive personality, but inside me, yes, my mother was that way, so I've inherited some of that. I could get very depressed a couple times in my life. And I went to a therapist, and they said, you know, really the basis of depression, in their opinion, was inability to make a decision. Go for it or don't go for it. Go back or go forward. You get stuck in that. It's like, just make some choice and move in some direction here. I think people get stuck in that indecisive phase, and all it does is bring you down.
Well, I'm going to come back to, Paul, I'm going to come back to the desire to change. Do you want to change? Mm-hmm. Do you want this in your life? And it could be a belief system. It could be a job. It could, you know,
a new marriage, whatever.
I was going to say, it could be a marriage, and it could be in the social issues.
Right. You know,
where you live. Make a decision. Consider those options. Now, my option in my church job was a phone call. I had no idea what I was going to do. I knew in June of 1990, I said, in 1 year, I will not be here. I just said that, told that to my wife and to a couple of friends, and said, I have no idea what I'm going to be doing, but I will not be here. And sometime January, February, we received a phone call. My wife, Toba, was asked, the Chevron Corporation is looking for external trainers.
Chevron is going to hire an ex-minister to be a trainer.
Well, they asked my wife, who was you know, in business, and that was her business resume, and she said, no, I can't do it. But Charlie could be interested, and the person who was making the phone call used to be in my ministry and loved my ministry, and said, "Are you kidding? We could get Charlie to do this because you know he can, because it was an external consultant to do training."
Right.
So
they'd seen you in front of a group of people and training people religiously. Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. So
then many people who have more New Age beliefs than you and I do would say, "You simply put it out to the universe."
I did. I would say that with my religious beliefs.
Really? Okay.
I put it out to the universe, and I happen to believe that God has something to do with the universe.
Okay.
So I just threw it out there, and I think that's I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a really, 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 really critical step.
Yeah.
Is throwing something out there, putting in a statement, putting it in writing.
Yes.
And getting it down, saying, I want to, I will. And then you don't even have to go back and review it. There was something about putting it in there and throwing it out to the universe that sticks, and it works. And I got a call from the universe, and I decided
you were
to,
open to it at that moment
to you. Say, you know, this looks like a grand opportunity, so I need to check it out.
I think that is a big part. I've heard many, I can give you lots of stories where people have said, I made a commitment and I just didn't tell myself. I told somebody. I wrote it down somewhere.
Yes.
I made some sort of declaration, this is real, and challenged myself to hold myself accountable, somebody to hold me accountable or whatever. I remember reading Jim Carrey once, the comedian, famous comedian, when he was struggling and homeless. He wrote down, he filled out a check, and he made a check to himself for $10 million, and they didn't have 10 cents. But he wrote it out, and he just kept it in his pocket. Someday I'm going to be able to cash this check. And, of course, you know the story. Yes, he did. He made millions.
He did, except he couldn't today. But
yeah, right. Yeah. I don't know what happened along the way. But, you know, that I hear those kind of anecdotal stories. Steve Harvey talks a lot about that, of how you just got, at some point in your life, you got to declare something. I'm going to be different. You got to physically tell somebody.
I think perhaps as we're talking about it, I think that could be one of the strongest steps.
I really do.
In making the change.
I do.
Is throwing it out there. Believe me, it sounds crazy. It sounds new agey. I don't care how it sounds. I just know it works.
Right.
That when you throw it out there. I did one thing one time where I said, what am I going to do in my life? And I said, in the next 5 years, I'm going to visit 10 countries.
Yeah, right. You said that right.
And I did it within 2 years.
Right.
And I had no idea. I had no idea how I was going to do that. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. Yet it just.
So
it
I
just
think
happened.
It's something about not just in your own mind making. Turning that switch, but publicly proclaiming it, writing it down, telling others, something about that commits you to it and makes you open to it.
It commits you. I mean, where you are now thinking about it and you are aware of it.
Right.
So the next one, we want to go through the next two really quickly
because
we're running late, but the next two won't take a long time. The fourth one is really in line with the third one of consider your options. It's contemplate. It's now that you've done your options, depending on the severity of the change, deep reflection is required. You don't just do it. You reflect. You look at the options. You know, you've weighed the options. Now it's time to reflect on them.
And do you have to remove yourself? Because you and Terry talk about that so often, and I do that so little. I suspect most of us do it so little, where I go somewhere, I get away, I go on a retreat, I get quiet, I do something where I get out of my normal self and my normal routine to find that, to deep dive into myself.
I rarely do that. I don't do it as frequently as I should, but I have 4 to 5 days a year minimum where I am by myself and reflecting on life, the universe, and everything.
I can't think of 4 or 5 days in my last 20 years that I've been alone like that. I've never gone on a retreat
or
anything.
You know, for me, for a well-lived life, it's essential.
Yes.
I mean, but that is for me.
Otherwise,
I'm just acting all the time, and I get so involved and so caught up in the actions. And then that's how you get caught up in, I can't make a change. Oh, I can't because you take no time out from it.
Next week, next month.
Terry talked about pausing and stepping back.
Right, he talks about it all the time.
You have to pause and step back and take a look at these
things. So now you've identified two tangible things you can do. One is, after you've decided you want to change and you're going to change, publicly declare it, write it down, take some action to put yourself out there, to throw it out to the universe and tell everybody. And then you're saying, get away, get quiet, pause, and reflect.
Yeah, and I did, now with my situation, I really did spend time and I pondered an hour, because it was definitely impacting my wife. Mm-hmm. Options in this matter was an entirely different kind of opportunity. Would I be credible as a minister going into talking to high-level business people with the Chevron Corporation?
Doesn't seem obvious to me, but maybe it did to them at the time here. If I was the HR director looking for a training, I wouldn't say, let's go get one of those ministers over there.
Well, that did actually help because they knew I could public speak and I had a business resume.
But I'll bet that when they went into the job, that wasn't one of the things they were seeking.
I turned out to be their number one trainer. By the way, their number one and highest paid trainer.
Do we have any doubt of that?
I was good at that stuff. But there's other questions. How long would the gig last? And then I'm out of a job and I'm unemployed. This is not a permanent gig. You're a consultant. You're an external consultant. So consultants come and go.
And you had a wife that was willing to go along. Many wives would say, over my dead body, I'm walking out of here if you do that. What are you, crazy? We got a job.
Fortunately, I've had a supportive wife that supported all
that. Not everybody's so lucky in that one.
Well, she just kind of believes in me. She just figures out. You keep figuring shit out. So, keep it up.
Keep trying.
All right, let's go on the last one, then we can get out of here. And that's just the obvious one, is decide on a course of thoughtful action.
I think that's the easiest. Once you've gone through all those other steps, making a decision is not as hard as you think it's going to be. If you've decided to change, if you're unhappy, you don't like what you believe, you've made a decision to change, you've thrown it out to the universe, you've taken steps to investigate it, then you step back and said, am I crazy? Is this really going to do it? And people are supporting you. Then that final step, which seems so hard, is not that hard. Was it hard to accept the job at Chevron after all the agonizing
Not
and
after that first damn paycheck.
See? There you go.
Say, holy cow, are you kidding me? What is this? This is money. This is crazy. But it comes to, I didn't want to bring church into this, but it comes into my theological beliefs that are, you know, I went to a very fundamentalist seminary, you know, I call it the redundant name, you know, Western Conservative Baptist.
Yeah, right. I suppose those liberal Baptists
out
there. Right?
And I am far from fundamentalist now. And, you know, I won't go as far as to speak as I am, but I am quite liberal in my theology, although my core doctrinal theology mm-hmm. is very conservative. Mm-hmm. Very, you know, the five things I believe, you know, are very conservative, and they fit right into the Nicene Creed and the Apostles' Creed, you know. So I go right with those. But when I had a minister friend that once used to call it that we as Christians too often major in the minors and minor in the majors.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Yeah,
you know, and I like to major in the majors.
Yeah,
these are the important things that make me. That make my religious beliefs distinct. Nevertheless, the thing that I have is a total acceptance of all religions. I have, you know, I do not say that Christianity is the only religion.
That doesn't strike me as today's evangelicalism out there.
Well, I am not an evangelical. I'm far from an evangelical. That's to be true. So anyway, let's just wrap this up. And I really would like to encourage people to challenge yourself, challenge your belief systems, to challenge your core ideals, and see, is there a better way out there? And if you are comfortable and perfectly happy with where you're at, God bless you. That's great. Be there. But if you find that perhaps I may need to alter some of my beliefs, I hope we've given you some ideas to do that. That's been our goal, and I want to thank Grandfather Paul for your willingness to play the change game with me. It's always fun chatting with you.
Yes,
and I want to thank our listeners for tuning into The Next Chapter with Charlie, and be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.